I mean, it says San Diego Wastelands.
Yeah, it straight up says it, man.
A pretty good clue. Unless the conspiracy extends all the way to the subtitles of the show. We don't know how deep this thing goes.
And so it begins.
Accessing file.
Welcome back to Gray Sector, a show by three friends who know of vast conspiracies involving dark forces within EarthGov, though we have no actual proof of that. I'm Mike.
I'm Sarah.
And I'm Joe.
Today brings us Season 2, Episode 6, Spider in the Web. This was directed by Ken G. Kremen?
Kevin G. Kremen?
I don't know. AKA the guy who likes annoying soap opera level camera shops with multiple people looking into the camera at the same time.
I you have never seen a soap opera.
Yeah, okay.
Never, ever.
Name three soap operas. I challenge
you. Oh, shit. You asked me this later in the outline, and I
wrote... She didn't let you prepare, and you still
General Hospital...
That's the one you know.
The Young and the Restless. The Young and the Restless. And All My Children.
Okay, that is three actual soap operas.
Is that wait? No, Dark Shadows. Dark Shadows. That's a soap opera.
You may have some people missing Dark Shadows.
Kevin G. Kremen directed this, and it was written by everyone's favorite writer, Larry DiTillio.
Larry DT.
This fucking episode was so weird to me, and then I saw Larry D. wrote it, and I was like, oh, that makes sense.
Now we know.
Yeah, the original Lawrence, possibly the only, back writing weird romances, awkward bromances, and torturing Talia. He's got his notes that he hits. He's going, bro, I'm going to do this.
He's got his lane and he stays in it.
My only real note before we begin is that not only is the bad guy in this episode armed with a weapon that is just their hand, which is another theme that Larry has explored before.
Yeah.
But he takes the time to let us know in an entire scene that this hand-based weapon is not the same one as was in his other episode, Born to the Purple. You see,
lest you think.
Yeah, lest you be confused. That episode had an electroshock glove that you put on your hand, and this episode has an electroshock hand that you put in a glove. Totally different things.
Lest you think that Larry doesn't have the range. He can go all the way from...
Yeah, the weirdest thing that jumped out at me on this episode, there's a descriptor in HBO Max. A killer stalks Talia, and he has already murdered once aboard Babylon 5. Talia and Garibaldi develop a mutual attraction. Sheridan uncovers a conspiracy. What's going on with that middle Talia mutual? What the fuck are they talking about?
They both like tea, obviously, Mike.
Is that what they're talking? Because I was like, what the hell are they referring to? Like, they both have the hots for Susan?
There's at least as much evidence for Talia developing a raging crush on Adrienne Barbeau in this episode.
And so, it begins.
We open. Susan is learning the fine art of actually running the station because she hasn't already been doing that, I guess. Whatever. Also, diplomacy has nuances. There are patterns and spacing of chairs, what wood the chairs are made of. Sheridan's practicing his executive presence by not doing any actual work himself.
So I paused this scene a couple of times because I was trying to figure out what Susan is taking notes on, and I'm fairly sure it's an Apple Newton.
Okay.
It's on. You can tell from the backlighting of the screen.
Yeah.
It also makes appearances two other times in this episode.
In other people's hands, right? Yeah. Other people, like Sheridan uses it and Tali is using it as well.
Texting in 2259 just means you write a note on an Apple Newton and then you go hand the physical Apple Newton.
to someone person. Else. So we go to a conference room. Talia is pondering life's meaning in front of a giant matte painting that's illuminated by a weird triangular lamp. She's meeting with her friend Taro Isogi, the founder of Future Corp. He wants to expand into Mars. He's negotiating with Amanda Carter from the Mars Colony Business Affairs Committee, a group that was clearly named by a drunk frat boy pulling out random MBA terms from a baseball cap that someone's going to puke in later in the night at the party.
Future Corp feels so much like a placeholder name.
Yeah, right?
I'm going to come up with a better name later, and then it just got
I forgot.
Well, you know, on the topic of placeholder names, Taro Isogi means hasty Taro.
And I googled Taro. Doesn't Taro just mean like eldest son? So it's just like
hasty eldest son.
Hasty guy.
Hasty guy. Yeah.
Did you look at the matte painting? It's like a little bonkers. I love this matte painting.
I think it's great.
It's like something like almost out of the 70s, although there's a weird triangular lamp in front of it that definitely feels early 90s.
So it's a view out of, I guess they're in a building that is on the interior cylinder of the station, and it's a view out into the open space in the center of the station, and you can see the Space BART rail and some other skyscrapers, which I know from reading the RPG book is the industrial park that's kind of to the north of the big station north.
The RPG book?
Yeah, I shut up. I'm not proud. Proud,
what are you laughing at, boy?
Sorry.
You've played this RPG. Don't make me put you on blast. I don't understand the politics of what is happening here. So last season,
it's weird. Yeah.
We had a bloody rebellion on Mars. So I would assume there's still like a war happening. But Isogi feels that he can do something in his corporate capacity that will prevent.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty clear, Sarah, from the scene. It's totally insane. Involves alien governments and will make them self-sufficient within 10 years. It's all right there, you know?
Is being dependent on alien governments is totally self-sufficient.
Yeah, self-sufficienting. That's what they need to do. Just
okay. With space colonies today, they don't sufficient enough.
Insufficient.
Sufficient. That more beer coming to face.
Okay.
Also, Talia's hair, I don't know if you guys noticed.
Oh, yeah.
It's unbelievable. She always looks better every time she comes on.
So our Mars negotiator, this is so exciting, is none other than Adrienne Barbeau. Yeah, this is like, and the cool part is our rich Future Corp executive is none other than James Shigeta? Shigeta, okay. Mispronouncing that.
My exposure to Adrienne Barbeau is actually pretty minimal, but the person who just immediately leaped out to me was James Shigeta, because he's from Die Hard. He's Mr. Takagi.
Right.
Alas, your Mr. Takagi did not see it that way, so he won't be joining us for the rest of his life.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And I don't think that Alan Rickman is going to show up and compliment his suit.
Nice suit. John Phillips, London.
That's not John Phillips of London. That is... this gold paisley shirt with a maroon Joker jacket, and it's just horrifying.
Suit is so bad.
Based on the belt buckle that Adrienne Barbeau has when she shows up, I think this is just the style at the time, as Grandpa Simpson would say.
So I tied an onion to my belt, which was the style at the time.
I'm realizing, is this like, do we think maybe he's secretly not rich at all? This is like a Trump thing.
I'm really rich.
Where he wears terribly bad suits. And that's sort of a tip-off. It's like, oh, maybe he doesn't actually have money.
So Adrienne Barbeau is very, very dear to my heart because she was in a number of John Carpenter projects, and Mike knows how much I love John Carpenter.
Yeah.
She was married to him for a little while, which is, I think, part of...
Oh, Jesus, I didn't know that. Okay.
I did not know that. I do remember her from Escape from New York.
Yes, yeah. And she was also one of the leads of The Fog, along with Jamie Lee Curtis and her mom, Janet Leigh. I tried to find some clips of her from the John Carpenter movies, but the problem is that so much of her acting in those movies is just looking completely disgusted with everyone around her.
No boom today. Boom tomorrow. There's always a boom tomorrow.
So we cut to the San Diego Wastelands, we think.
Yeah, but it says San Diego Wastelands.
Yeah, it straight up says it, man.
That's a pretty good clue. Unless the conspiracy extends all the way to the subtitles of the show. We don't know how deep this thing goes.
The camera like pans over like all this wasteland, and it's like, it doesn't make any sense, right? We look like we're watching like a scene in Terminator 2 or something.
Or a scene from Battle Truck.
Oh God.
Battle Truck.
Oh God. Someone is watching President Clark explain that he is definitely stopping at Czechoslovakia. He has no further plans to go east. He's saying that Deutschland, Earth needs to take care of its own people. And so it scrolls up. A woman's lips say commence operation after a kaleidoscope tells her everything has arrived at Babylon 5 and is ready.
You know, the big reveal of the identity of the Annunciation fetishist from the scene ends up not making any sense.
No.
Because why would you put a psychop in a bunker in a wasteland to do routine communications tasks and talk to a kaleidoscope? Psychic powers require line of sight.
We're not talking episode 5, like Darth Vader line of sight. You have to actually be in the room.
I also don't know if spending the majority of the digital FX budget on that shot of San Diego was the best call.
Yeah.
There might have been a few other things in this episode that you could have spent some money on.
For the record, JMS claims it was a model.
It's only a model.
Camelot. 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 It's only a model.
For someone who lives by herself in a bunker, presumably this lady's lipstick game is really on point, though.
Yeah, it's true, actually, right?
She knew she was going to be filmed from the side, very carefully enunciating.
I feel like JMS really wants us to ask what happened in San Diego. Just write it in if you want to talk about it, man. Like, an episode about the history of San Diego, if that's what you need.
Like, according to the Lurker's Guide, JMS lived in San Diego once, and so he just decided he would nuke
just
it.
He wanted
to nuke it. He's like, fuck San Diego.
Oh, that makes it so much better.
Fuckers need to die.
Fools to the left of me, feeders to the right. I need to find a real job.
So we scroll over to a bunch of shipping containers, including several containers that say classified in all capital letters, giant letters, because that's definitely the best way to make sure that no one's going to look at them. One of the crates opens and a hand emerges, plus some steam, and we cut to credits. So this seemed like right out of a here's how to direct a B-grade horror film manual.
You're saying that B-grade horror films are bad? Because I'll fight you.
I think that's the implication, Sarah, yeah. He doesn't like B-grade horror films.
No.
Dead to me. Also, your husband is going to be very upset about this.
I don't know. I don't want to fight you because I'll lose. Which popular film director is this? Because like the coffin opening.
This is a vampire coming out of the grave shot. Like they've got mist and a hand. Or possibly Romero, Night of the Living Dead.
Okay, yeah, Romero. It's because the hand with the steam, it was like a 10-second shot. Like it was.
It's the hand with the ring. So I'm like, the ring is important, right? And we will discuss what the ring turns out to do later on.
It's really fortunate that those cargo guys placed that crate upright and not near other crates.
Yeah, wow. Actually.
What if it was upside down, you know?
Crate's just going to rock back and forth for a while, and then you hear the voice of somebody being like, little help here.
You are going to resist, I hope.
So Sheridan is in his office. He's taking a call from Mallory Archer.
I am ready for a grandchild. It won't be the potato-faced spawn of some Irish whore.
Who is apparently a senator now.
I might vote for her.
She wants him to keep an eye on the Isogi negotiations and make sure to point out where the eyes and ears are in case he forgets.
She has like a little wand, like a magic wand.
These are your eyes.
Ears.
So Sheridan points out that because we're not on Star Trek, he can't actually do anything so crazy as keeping an eye on corporations because of a silly thing like planetary security.
It's kind of amazing, isn't it? Like
his job does not include negotiating with aliens, with humans, or station operations.
So nothing really. His job is to do nothing most of the time, I think.
Does he work at Sorry, you're going to have to do that.
I, I find this scene a little bit weird because
it is weird.
Sheridan's really skeptical. He's like, it's a conspiracy. I can't look into that. And then later on, it comes out that he collects secrets.
Yeah.
So why is he? You think he'd be interested? Is what I'm saying.
And by the way, just like the guest stars here are nuts. So Senator, what's her face?
She's this week's senator.
Senator Mallory Archer. Yeah.
Oh my God. What shade is that? Crack hole red?
Is played by none other than Jessica Walter of Archer, Arrested Development. She has 161 credits in IMDb. She actually passed last year, unfortunately. Yeah. Barbo has 155, and Shigita, our green actor in this episode, has 89.
I kept waiting for her to be like, it's one Martian colony, John. How much can it cost? Yeah. 10 credits?
Yeah. We go to the conference room. Isogi and Carter are negotiating. Talia reading Carter's mind constantly. I have no fucking idea how anyone negotiates this way. I also don't know why Carter doesn't have her own telepath. And so afterwards, Isogi and Talia decide they're going to go eat spoo together.
So the idea here, we get a little more detail, as Joe said, is that Future Corp is going to set up trade arrangements with aliens so Mars can sell their stuff to aliens, and that would make them financially independent of Earth. I'm really unclear about how that would make all of the Earth Force soldiers on Mars just magically go poof into a cloud of sparkles. This is the second appearance of our Apple Newton. Talia has it now.
Okay.
So I think she was writing back to Susan's original note.
So like, are they writing notes and then literally handing the Newton back and forth like a physical...
That's my hypothesis, yes.
Features. Yeah, it's like a physical post-it note.
No, it must have been note, right?
It had handwriting recognition. I remember that because they had them in the store and you could go and they were like, write Apple. And I wrote Apple. What did it say? I believe it's a sock. Now, my handwriting is terrible. I will cop for this. But
nice.
I'm still offended.
Larry loves these scenes, by the way. The telepath monitoring the negotiation scene.
Yep.
Born to the Purple, Deathwalker, Eyes, and this one all have these scenes. And he only has like 7 episodes.
But in purple, I am stunning.
So we switch over back to the round table in front of an enormous matte painting. Sheridan's giving Susan the rundown of the Tikar negotiations. He definitely thinks we're going to be seeing more of this race we've never heard of before and will never hear again after this episode.
We don't even get to see them in this episode.
We don't.
This is a place where you could have used some digital FX. You could have had the glowy cloud aliens. Sheridan's dialogue here, his when he's talking to Ivanova, has a really unfortunate ring of, honey, everyone at my business meeting just loved your casserole. You, man.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't understand why Sheridan isn't famous for First Contact instead of for blowing up the Black Star.
Everyone has a First Contact story, Sarah. That's the problem.
Oh, I see.
Sinclair has like 2, or, you know, if you count Zathras twice, 3.
Zathras is the best one. Let's be honest.
So, like, I think only one person has blown up a Minbari capital ship, so it's got to be the...
Fair.
Do you know what the last song said just before he died?
We cut over. Talia and Isogi are walking down the hallway of Dr. Caligari when Terminator Henry Winkler walks up and electrocutes Isogi. Talia sees an Earth Alliance cruiser in Terminator Henry Winkler's mind, and then he wanders off.
Hey, are you saying he's a Fonzie zombie?
For the record, listener, Joe, I think, came up with Terminator Henry Winkler.
There's a shot where he looks exactly like him.
It's
kind of crazy.
It's
this guy. I didn't recognize him the first time. IMDb informs me is Michael Beck, who I mostly know as Swan from The Warriors. But Joe pointed out
he's in Battle Truck, Sarah.
Yeah. Oh,
I had never seen Battle Truck, but I will tell the listener, Battle Truck is on YouTube and it's amazing. And we're now a Battle Truck fan cast. I'm sorry.
Not doing any more episodes of Babylon 5. We're just going to focus on critiquing and examining the nuances of Battle Truck.
Yes.
So wait, is Battle Truck a series or a movie?
It is a movie.
It's a movie. Oh, it's a single movie. Sarah, does this mean that you are advocating that we watch Battle Truck at the end of season 2?
I think you should go watch Battle Truck right now. I don't
care. Oh, okay.
I don't think you need to wait. You have to go see Battle Truck.
I'll just stop hosting the podcast. Everything. I'll go over. I'll watch Battle Truck.
If you're listening to the podcast right now, go watch Battle Truck.
Pause immediately. Stop listening to it. Go watch Battle Truck. Yeah.
Okay. I was reminded on Twitter by our friends at the Yum Yum Podcast. Hi, Yum Yum Crew.
Oh, nice. Hey, Yum Yum Crew.
This guy was also in Xanadu, the Olivia Newton-John vehicle, but that didn't have any Battle Trucks in it, so I didn't really pay attention.
Whereas Battle Michael Truck Beck, is, I would like to point out, Battle Truck has a battle truck in it.
Yes. That's right. I mean, it does what it says on the tin.
I need to watch this. I really need to watch this, obviously. Yeah. This has been Battle Truck Podcasts with Mike, Joe, and Sarah. Now on to our regular show.
James Shigeta has been typecast as a CEO who dies violently in order to motivate future action in the plot. And it's kind of funny.
I was confused about this one because the electrical output thing happens again. Wouldn't that show up somewhere?
Station sensors are still busy counting the oxygen. When they're done counting the oxygen, maybe they'll count the electricity.
Their electrical monitoring is extremely plot dependent. Let's put it that way.
So we cut over to the villa of Sheratron. Sheridan is getting the rundown.
It's beautiful in the summer.
Yeah. Sheridan's getting the rundown from Talia while being really bitchy to her. I mean, like, fucking really bitchy. He was bitchy to Senator What's-Her-Face, too. I think he's just in a bitchy mood.
He's bitchy this whole episode.
Sheridan might have a personality disorder.
Yeah, I don't know. So Talia asks if she can leave. She's not in the chain of command, so I don't know why she bothered asking. Just be like, sorry, I'm leaving. Fuck off. And then Garibaldi volunteers to escort her home for the night.
This scene for me was like, so Talia. So this guy said free Mars, but I know free Mars terrorists, and he's no free Mars terrorist. Sheridan. Right. So why would Free Mars do this? Talia, I just said it was not. Furthermore, why was Mr. Takagi in bed with terrorists like Free Mars? He hated violence. He was the one murdered.
And then after the day she's had, they're like, go hang out with Garibaldi. Like, are you fucking kidding me?
So we cut over to the elevator. So Garibaldi, who's finally figured out how to use an elevator. This is canonical,
actually. He knows how to use an elevator when he's harassing someone.
Yeah.
Oh,
or when he was shot that one time.
It's security in general who are elevator deficient.
So we're saying Garibaldi's elevator use is harassment dependent?
Mm-hmm. He only knows how to use it if there's a blonde in the elevator.
Yeah, okay. So he decides that like low-key hitting on Talia, you know, 5 minutes after her friend was murdered right in front of her, that's a great idea. And she replies with badinage.
It's an excellent SAT word.
I'm beginning to think that someone who definitely not JMS, just one of the writers.
One of the many, many writers.
thinks that women who just lost a friend or husband or lover secretly just want to be pawed at and hit on by the nearest guy.
Oh, God.
Lest they be alone for a few moments.
God. You can't let women wander around unattached. It makes them want to vote. Just like
but in purple, I am stunning.
We cut over to the Zocalo. Terminator Henry Winkler walks through the Zocalo in his bad 90s leather coat. He connects to a computer, thankfully facing away from the 30 people he just walked past. And then a kaleidoscope makes him rewatch his murder video on a public computer and then spots Talia Winters in the video and tells him to kill her.
So this is where we learn what the ring does.
Oh, yeah.
The ring is a special mechanism that allows him to remove his glove. Take the glove off of the robot hand with his human hand, but only if he turns ring. Yep. It's also very good that he has the secret robot hand, which allows him in the scene to push a button. People who didn't have a robot hand, it might take a lot of effort to push.
I think non-cybernetically enhanced people would not be able to push that button.
They'd really struggle. Yeah.
I think technically it's a data crystal port.
Oh.
We're just lucky that data crystal ports are finger-sized, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I know, Sarah, that as I'm the audience, that
yes.
I would still be wondering, how does he take the glove off?
How does he do that? What is that?
If they hadn't revealed that critical information that, mm-hmm. it's the ring. It's the ring, guys.
I'd be struggling with this whole episode.
Yeah.
Key plot hole had not been fixed.
So we cut over to CNC. Sheridan and Susan are discussing how interesting Talia is in the middle of CNC.
But you know how I feel about telepaths.
Do I ever?
threw one out of a third-story window on Io.
There was an ample pool below the window.
I'll assume you knew that.
Susan points out that Talia is loyal to Sycor, and Sheridan, I love this, captain of the Earth Alliance, sitting in the middle of CNC in a station of the Earth Alliance, declares that he trusts individuals, not organizations. Yeah.
The dialogue they do here is so close to several bits from Airplane, which I know came after. But Ivana was like, a murderer? Who is it? This person who intentionally kills another person, but that's not important now.
This woman has to be gotten to a hospital.
A hospital? What is it?
It's a big building with patients, but that's not important right now.
I also like the part where he's like, so I just said that you threw a telepath out a window, but I don't understand why you don't trust Sycor.
To be fair, on Io, the gravity is extremely low, so throwing someone out a window could just be playful foreplay.
Also, there was a pool, she said, so I really want to know more about Io now. It's like Io the Vegas.
Have you ever seen them eat? That's horror for you.
So we cut over to Amanda's quarters. She is typing on the largest laptop anyone has ever seen.
And I just want to comment that briefcase is larger than laptops actually were in 1994. Like
canonically in the show, that laptop is larger than Jakar and Londo's desktops.
Sheridan comes in. He gives her the murdery news. She explains that all of the expected bad people who think might have done it definitely didn't do it.
When she lets him in without checking to see who it is, I actually like yelled at my screen, Adrienne, did you learn nothing from the fog?
I find it pretty strange that all of the people that she thinks might have done it definitely doesn't include Free Mars, but does include the Senate and the Mars conglomerate, which, I don't know, secret terrorist groups, I think, would possibly be more informed.
So she works for something that's not the Mars conglomerate.
Yeah, she works for the...
What does she work for?
The Mars Bureau something, MBA something.
Well, she's part of Mars government somehow. We know that.
It does not reflect well on Sheridan that I found myself thinking that Garibaldi would have done a better job with interrogation. And he never asks any questions like, where were you at such a time? Like,
yeah, no.
He's not following the Garibaldi method. Now, I will grant that step one, search space, is not necessary because they already found the body. But right. The rest, he should have been following the flowchart. It's simple.
Whose name? A random name. What are two unconnected events that you can hypothesize are connected?
Yeah.
I'll put the flowchart on Twitter.
She's just got the murder, which is totally connected. So, you know, it needs to be unconnected event.
We go to Garibaldi. I think it's Garibaldi's office.
I believe it is the Baldi security cave, yes.
Yeah, it's the Baldi cave. So Garibaldi is explaining to Sheridan that the electro weapon that the murderer used must have been very high tech because he has no idea how they got it past his crack security troopers.
They might have put it in a box or...
A suitcase, a bag with nothing on top of it. Just anything, really.
They might have put it in a crate that said classified because nobody opens those.
But Sheridan has a hunch that it's actually more of an inside job.
Yeah, what nobody realizes, including Garibaldi, is that those scanners, they aren't used anymore. You can just walk into the station. We've seen people do that. They just walk out of their ship, walk down a corridor, walk by a dude who checks their ID, notes that it's not valid, and then just waves them through. Right?
Yeah.
That's how it works.
My theory is that the scanners don't work because the batteries ran out and they can't import any more batteries.
Oh, that's good.
This is the second time, or maybe the third time, that Garibaldi talks about the forensics department.
Yeah.
And I really want to see that spinoff show.
CSI Babylon 5, starring David Hasselhoff as Dr. Hoff. Mariska Hargitay as Ombuds Worcestershire. And Richard Pelzer as Security Officer John Munch.
Did anyone notice his security wall?
In season one, the Baldi Cave had all these monitors. Most of them showed space.
Yeah, space.
But I guess Lou sold them for cheeseburger money while
he was in the Well, they were monitoring just space. So I think eventually, once Garibaldi was in a coma, everyone was like, hey guys, why do we have all these monitors that are just showing us space?
Some me there's going to be a crime in space, and then you're going to feel pretty silly.
Sheridan's all, I've got this hunch. It's an inside job. Garibaldi just said that it was a prosthetic weapon. That's pretty much all they have to go. Prosthetic weapon, and then Talia saying, well, he didn't think, like, he didn't have a lot of thoughts in his head. Those are the only two pieces of evidence that Sheridan has. And he's all, I know, maybe it's this obscure cyborg assassin program I read about happening 20 or 30 years ago, but was canceled. That's it.
My theory is that Sinclair left the TV in the commander's quarters stuck on the History Channel. So Sheridan has been watching a lot of History's Mysteries.
Yeah, I could see that.
I think we can articulate. So people know Occam's razor, which is the simplest explanation, is most likely to be true. I think Detilio's electric shaver is like a comedic theory. Which is the most convoluted explanation is the most likely to be exposition.
Well, it has to be exposition because it doesn't fucking make any sense.
Nobody's going to, like, guess it, yeah.
Yeah, no.
Yes, and you can kiss my plump Centauri. Ah!
We cut over to the walkway of Dr. Caligari because the obviously about to be dead security guy escorts Talia back to the same light fixture that was in the hallway of Dr. Caligari earlier.
It's just on Velcro. They can just take it off the wall. And
they can have more than one light.
So Terminator Henry Winkler walks up and just kills him. He is about to electrify Talia again. And then she has another telepathic view into his brain and sees the cruiser killing him again.
Yeah, but then he glitches out.
Yeah.
Glitches out. So did the search he ran earlier, like, identify this specific location that she was going to be in?
Yeah, I have no
idea.
This
is where she is going to be in 15 minutes, specifically.
Yeah.
He's booking it when he comes in there. He's running full, you know, he's just, dude.
The B5 computer is very well informed. I really enjoy the direction of this scene. Talia and the security red shirt are crossing the bridge to go to another hallway. Our cyber warrior comes up behind them and attacks them. And then Talia just sort of stands there and waits for him to kill the security guy and then runs towards him.
There's also some really terrible fight choreography where they're struggling, and she's like, she's supposed to grab his hair because there's a later scene where Garibaldi mentions that he has some hair that she grabbed. So she has to grab the hair, and the way they kind of do it in the scene is they're struggling, her hands are nowhere near his head or hair, and then, you know, he's basically got her pinned, right, where she's holding off the glove, and then she suddenly just moves her hand to the side of his head, just like, oh, and I'm supposed to grab up here.
Kevin Kremen is Ed Wooding it. He's like, one take, that's fine. I don't understand. Can Talia not do the pain thing that Jeffrey Combs can do?
Like, yeah,
she can't,
I know,
telepathically defend herself?
I guess I not.
So. I think you have to be pretty advanced.
So like, the thing that bugged me about the scene is it's like basically a complete reiteration of the previous scene, right? Like, I feel like we're watching Catherine and Jeff on a date and they're about to discuss, like, proportions of passion harsh, and man. Teeth. Yeah, it's just, oh, God.
I don't understand where you're coming from there, Mike. I really don't. No, this scene is completely, you know, the Catherine and Jeff conversations were all just straight rehashes. They just said the exact same thing. This scene has totally new things. We didn't know he had multiple personalities. That appears in this scene. He actually, in the other scene, he just kind of looks at her and walks away. You could say that's a glitch, but we don't really know it's a glitch. Maybe, you know, as far as we know, he was just programmed to kill the one guy and he just ignores her, right? It's only later that he's told, oh, you have to go kill that lady. In this scene, it's clear that he's, like, totally glitching out. I think he does a good job with it. I mean, the scene is terribly direct, yes, and and poorly lit. But in terms of what it does, I don't see it as
a plot slightly.
Yeah. It does. It does advance the plot. I don't see it as reiteration.
Nothing is going to be as bad as Jeff and Catherine. I'm sorry.
That's true. Just yeah, no.
You're like going nuclear, man. That's
yeah, that's true. No.
Think about you in summer. I think about you in winter.
Why in snow?
So we cut over to the Sheratron villa. Talia is explaining her vision. Garibaldi comes in to explain that they've identified the murderer as Abel Horn and that he's dead. Dun, dun, dun.
Abel Horn, Sheridan says incredulously, since who the fuck came up with that name?
Larry DiTilio was spending so much time on that name that that's why he had to leave Future Corp in there. He was like, yeah. Asriel Fang Battle, Amos Boneface, Aaron Bugleton.
He had nothing. Oh, man.
It was a tough day for Larry.
Yeah.
Can we pause for a moment to ponder what Garibaldi says here? Because what he says is, I checked the DNA in the hair Ms. Winters pulled out of his head. It's positive.
It's positive.
What? It's positive for being hair.
It's got DNA. I checked the DNA and it's got DNA.
This is not a clear and present danger. I must read the rule book again.
We cut over to Amanda Carter's quarters. She walks in to her quarters with her giant briefcase laptop. Terminator Henry Winkler is there in her quarters and greets her by trying to kiss her. Ugh. Apparently, these two have kind of a history because Carter was once in Free Mars because no one could have predicted that would be coming.
You know, it wouldn't be a Larry D joint without at least two awkward bromances / romance.
Oh, God, so. It's true.
I actually think Michael Beck does a pretty good job distinguishing between when he's in zombie mode and when he's like actual human mode.
Yeah, I think he does, too.
I mean, I might just be biased because I love Battle Truck. He does it.
Battle Truck.
Did you notice the space racism? So he mentioned a snakehead doc, and I was like, oh, that's totally Walker and Necklace Ranger right there. Like, someone is carrying on his legacy.
He wrote TKO, so he's just carrying on his own legacy.
He really wants to make snakehead happen.
Yeah, he does.
He almost as much as he wants Stroke Off to make a comeback.
I think he's finally let that one go. We'll see if it comes back in a later episode.
We'll see.
Are there other later Larry Dottilio?
You know what's his next? Gropos.
Oh, not Gropos.
Oh, God. Oh, one of the most panned episodes in the entire series.
You know what it features? Awkward romances. Oh, yeah.
That's true, actually.
Larry knows what he likes.
So we go to CNC. Ivanova is totally getting ready to cut a bitch.
I love this scene.
It's great. Sheridan eases her headache by saying that, no, it's okay. It's okay. You can just let ships leave now because he has a hunch that Horn isn't going to try and escape.
So the thing that he just said, but the orders that he just gave her to carry out.
And that he gave her to carry out because he's going to go down to his quarters for some executive time.
Be in my quarters. There's something I want to check out.
You can visit little Johnny on your own time, Captain.
He's going to go read 8chan and check up on the latest QAnon conspiracies. You deal with all this work.
Did I miss a memo? Because when did Sheridan lock down the station?
He did it when he was talking to Ivanova about how interesting Talia was. Like, it was a very brief thing.
But like, can he arrest 250,000 people at once?
The Ombuds are apparently on vacation.
Are you questioning his authority?
And you will respect my authority!
His authority!
Okay.
He just has a hunch, so he can just say to 250,000 people, you just can't leave ever. You have no autonomy of movement.
Yeah, anymore. What do you yes, why not? It's his fucking station, man.
I feel like Sheridan and Garibaldi just swap personalities periodically throughout this episode.
Interesting. Okay.
It's almost as though Larry Dottilio doesn't differentiate between those characters very well.
Sheridan has his personality this episode.
Like, so you think despite the fact that Larry Dottilio is written now, what, this is the fifth probably? I think this is the fifth episode or fourth?
Fifth. I think.
Yeah, this is a fifth episode. You think maybe Larry D just doesn't know fucking who any of these characters are? Like,
wasn't
he just
his first Sheridan episode?
Oh, yeah. It might have been.
It is.
Yeah, he might have just mixed them up. He forgot. Like, he's just like, I don't know the new guy.
Like, I have a lot of stuff to write about torturing Andrea Thompson. So
boom, sooner or later, boom.
We cut to Sheridan's quarters. Garibaldi knocks on the door, and Sheridan is doing his best impression of Captain Picard.
Come.
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 Sheridan explains that Terminator Henry Winkler is probably just a cyber zombie from Earth. There was an experiment 3 decades ago that sounds like it definitely doesn't conform to the Nuremberg Code. Call me lazy, but it seems like the Earth government might be kind of fucking evil.
I think we already knew that, Mike.
Decades of history.
What? No.
Yeah.
I have questions.
Yeah, this weird-ass conspiracy doesn't make very much sense.
No.
Humans can't function with full-on machines in their brains. I mean, unless they were humans with full-on machines in their brains in other Larry Dottilio scripts. Because that happened. So the solution is using people who are about to die, which how is that?
If you really just sit there and think about how you're about to die, maybe you won't die. Is that?
I don't. I guess they medically fixed them. So
they tricked them into thinking they weren't dead yet.
Also, Garibaldi, I note, confronted with a series of facts that require some deductive reasoning. He outsources it to Sheridan.
That is Lisa's character.
Who applies the Tilio electric razor to it and comes up with, yes, it could be the simple explanation, but maybe this ridiculous one.
It's the super complicated one.
Ivanova is always right. I will listen to Ivanova. Ivanova is God.
We cut to Sheridan's office. Sheridan is explaining to our audience that Terminator Henry Winkler is powered by MacGuffin radiation. Maybe we can track him that way. And Garibaldi proceeds to help in the most epic way possible. Only Han Solo has proved more helpful in a situation just like this.
I like this scene. It's very funny.
Just the infinite bitchiness with which Sheridan gestures at the console when Garibaldi's let the wizard take a try. It's amazing. It's now canonical that Babylon 5 has a full-fledged forensics department, but no IT.
So, okay, I gotta check. Is this our first? Because Zach Allen calls in the middle of this scene. He's like, Chief, it's Zach Allen. And I was like, that's usually if you know someone, you don't have to introduce your full name.
Maybe if you work for Garibaldi, you just want to make sure.
Yeah, you want to make sure. Is this our first Zach?
It's the first time he appears, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Canonically, he was made second in command after the aide with no name was inexplicably sacked, but he doesn't appear till this episode.
So we cut to a random hallway. Zach, our new character Zach, is escorting Talia around random hallways with some red shirts, and Garibaldi joins them to remind Talia how completely unsafe it is to just walk around the station with only his security escorting her.
They're just trailing her like little ducklings too. It's very funny.
So they all then proceed to let her walk into a completely unsecured room without first checking that room. It was great.
His paranoia has some odd lapses.
Yeah, right?
I guess Larry transferred it all to Sheridan this episode. So
why do they do this? And also, why does Talia not shout for security when she walks in and the door closes? No, she goes, Amanda Carter or whatever she said. And no one responds, nothing. And it's a few seconds. And I'm just like, you should say something. Shout.
It's a twap.
Scream. Whatever.
You see, Mike, it has to do with PVAS. Have we spoken about PVAS before?
We haven't. We need to talk about this.
PVAS is peripheral vision attenuation syndrome. It's a common side effect of being on Babylon 5. No one really knows what causes it, but someday, perhaps, one of the medical authorities, like Dr. Franklin, will get around to doing a study on why people walk into rooms and mysteriously cannot see out of the corners of their eyes.
Yeah.
Thank you for this time that we've spent talking about PVAS.
It's very serious.
Listening to your TED Talk. We got some scenes. There's some back and forth scenes. So there's a scene where Sheridan is figuring out where Terminator Henry Winkler is. And then there's a scene where Talia is getting very badly acted at by Terminator Henry Winkler.
Awesomely acted at.
Oh, God, no, it's terrible. Sheridan figures out, I love this, that he's in Carter's room with Talia and then calls Garibaldi.
He's inside the room.
The zombie is coming from inside the house.
And he calls Garibaldi because, someone has to tell Garibaldi what's actually happening in security, right? And they eventually get into the room and Sheridan comes in to hostage negotiate because they knew Garibaldi couldn't do it. And Amanda Carter wakes up just in time to watch Terminator Henry Winkler's bad acting death. It's quite terrible. And then they run away because Terminator Henry Winkler was rigged to self-destruct just like the Predator.
I mean, that's how I plan to go.
I dispute your characterizations. There's what? No bad acting no. here.
What are you talking about? Of course there is.
He's supposed to be over the top crazy. He's a fanatical terrorist with a machine in his brain who just woke up on a space station with no memory of how he got there, why he just killed several people, and what the visions and images in his head mean. Of course he's going to be all like, what am I doing? I don't know. I mean,
He doesn't understand why he's having visions of a painful operation that's being overseen by someone cosplaying as Agent Scully. It's very
wow.
This is also the point at which we are corrected. He is not emitting benign ions. He is emitting dramatic irony particles.
Scan complete. Low-level uranium radiation detected.
Yeah. So why does Zach Allen carry around what looks like, you know, in Ghostbusters, when they're in the library in that first scene and they have that, like, the ghost Geiger counter? Why is Zach Allen carrying around the self-destruct Geiger counter?
Zach Allen is on the ghostbusting unit of Babylon 5. That's another spinoff series we don't get.
Like, he's got the, what is it, iranium?
Low-level iranium radiation.
Whatever. He's got that thing, like, any, we've never seen it before. We didn't see him carrying it before. It wasn't on his belt. It wasn't in the scene. It wasn't in the camera.
Exactly.
Are you sure you want to ask this?
Terminator Henry Winkler dies, and then Zach Allen leans over with his weird Geiger counter that just appears from nowhere, and he's like, we have to run now. He's going to explode. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
He says it very calmly, and he doesn't move. He just stays there. It's about to blow. What do you think we should do?
I would like, as an occasional DM, I'd like to compliment Larry DiTilio on lining the bad guy with explosives. I personally try to line all my big, bad, evil guys with explosives, because this is the way.
This is the way.
Nice.
I bet Larry DiTilio would be a great game master.
I think he would.
It'd be a lot of fun.
It's too bad that we're only going to be able to invite the ghost of Larry DiTilio to game master.
I think JMS and Larry DiTilio have played role playing games together. That is not. I have no proof of this. This is purely conjecture.
Oh, he played with somebody, according to the foreword, the role playing game. I don't think it was Larry DiTilio. I certainly don't have the role playing book within arm's reach, because that. Would
she reaches over her shoulder and grabs the role playing book, and she's reading the passage. Sad. Right now. Have they
Larry? He's talking about Larry. Hold on. Maybe he did play with Larry DiTilio.
I think they did, right? Because
Quote from the foreword of the RPG book. The first and only time I've ever played a role-playing game was when my friend of many years, Larry DiTilio, invited me and a handful of others to his home to play one of the games he'd helped create for another company, Call of Cthulhu.
Nice.
Nice.
Wow. Okay. So wait, do we have to revise our opinion on Larry DiTilio since he created Call of Cthulhu? That makes him pretty cool. So we cut over to MedLab MedPlace. The doctor is using one of the giant Q-tips that they had left over from Garibaldi's procedure. He Q-tips her face a bit, and then she explains, you know, her love affair with, you know, history and love affair with Terminator Henry Winkler and Free Mars. And Talia and Sheridan plot with her to try and bring about a Free Mars for some reason, while Garibaldi looks on trying to remember why these Q-tips look really familiar.
He does have a sort of, did I leave the iron on look on.
Yeah, he's looking at them in the scene, and I'm like, that's hilarious, actually.
I question, this scene is just very strange, because I don't think she could have belonged to Free Mars and it be a secret, especially as she admits that she was dating Abel Horn. Surely there would be pictures of them together, people who remembered them together. It's not like everyone in Free Mars is a secret. People know who they are.
Yeah.
So I just don't think, there's so many people who would want to know, journalists, the Senate, all these people would have investigated her, leaked this information. It doesn't make a lot of sense. And why is Sheridan, isn't he Earth Force? Why would he try to free Mars? I guess his special friends wanted to free Mars. I don't know.
His special friends just got blown up by Free Mars. Like, independence from Mars is presented as a
bad thing.
De facto, the right choice. Also, they're discussing this secret in the crowded medbay.
That was hilarious. I mean, this was...
No, you're supposed to take secrets to the maze and the Zen garden.
or CNC.
Also, given Talia's history that we talk about in this episode, like, she definitely has an attachment disorder.
Yeah.
When she talks about Asogi as being like a father to her, this is like a guy. This is like a coworker from a few jobs, so...
So we cut some random hallways. Sheridan, Garibaldi, and Talia leave Medlab Medbay. Garibaldi is confused why Sheridan wants to work with Carter since she is an accessory to murder and, you know, all that. Talia thinks it's just not a big deal. You know, Terminator Henry Winkler wasn't really trying to kill her, you know, just Talia. Besides, murder's not really illegal. So, you know, it's... And then she lies about her scan and mentions that there was definitely, absolutely, certainly not any psychops when she scanned Terminator Henry Winkler. Yeah, so I got a question here. Like, we've determined that Talia seems to be on Psycor's side, right? In case you were wondering whether we're going to put her in, like, the good guy or the bad guy camp.
Well, yeah, but Mike, we just went over why, you know, Sheridan trusts in people, not organizations. So whether she...
Yeah.
Right. Sure, she's loyal to Psycor. Everyone knows that. But I don't think that necessarily makes her good or bad. Remember, her mind reading isn't admissible in court. So even if she were to say, oh, there was definitely a psychop, she has no proof. And it's not like that would be good for her career or Sheridan's. So, and it's also not like Sheridan is saying, look, we need this information because I suspect there's a secret cyborg assassin program run by a secret organization within Earth Force. He doesn't... He doesn't tell her that either. So she has reason to expose the Psycor to any kind of liability here.
I mean, the administration of Babylon 5 has had some pretty solid proof of conspiracies before and never done anything about it. So
Yeah, it's true.
And they had a whole cargo bay full of transmitters that were tuned to the frequency of the president's ship that blew up. And like, yeah, well, what can we do?
Well, this guy told them to load all that evidence and all of their witnesses onto one ship and then send it off into space.
The button on the scene is Sheridan saying that he's going to go help Ivanova move out the traffic. And I was really sad that we don't get him like in a spacesuit with those things.
What do you want, you moon-faced assassin of joy?
We cut over to the villa of Sheratron. So Garibaldi stops by so Sheridan can explain everything to our audience members who were not paying any attention. Sheridan confirms with Garibaldi that the info he's about to give will never, ever leave the room they're in, the room that has no door on it.
Does that mean that this deal also encompasses the next room? Like, what have been wondering?
I don't know. There's like, you look at the room and there's no door. Like, you just walk in
what
and out.
What is a
there's
room, no- really?
So apparently for 6 years, there's been a secret group doing rogue shit inside of EarthGov. They're called Bureau 13, which is very important to remember because as far as I can remember, this never comes up again.
That's how secret they are.
This is how secret they are. This is the only time you're going to hear it. There's a test later. So Bureau 13, Sheridan explains that Earth is in trouble because everything bad is connected to everything else that is bad somehow. He has no proof of that.
You're not really sticking to the narrative here, Mike. Bureau 13, very important, of course. Super important, just like Karn Malari.
That guy,
And the Euphrates Treaty. Yes, you remember the
No, I don't actually. I don't remember it at all.
Yeah. Very important, just like Bureau 13. Though for reals, apparently they had to change the name from Bureau 13 because Bureau 13 is the name of a role-playing game.
Oh.
JMS was not aware of this and didn't want to taint or, you know, dilute the product brand of the role-playing game with
Bureau 13 Stalking the Night Fantastic. This looks great.
Yes. It's a weird, strange role-playing game about kind of like X-Files meets James Bond or something.
That's some crazy shit. So can someone explain it? So spider in the web, is this a colloquialism that I just have never heard somehow?
I think that it's a reference to Sherlock Holmes. Is my theory.
Oh,
that's how
okay.
That's how Holmes describes Moriarty.
Mm.
That you can deduce the existence of the bad guy from the tremors at the edges of the web, which is, you know, totally fitting because, as we all know, John Sheridan is also a legendary detective with a cocaine. My favorite thing about this scene is that Sheridan is sitting there making notes. This is our third appearance at the Apple Newton, but it is
nice.
It's out of batteries at this point, so he's just making notes on a dark screen. And I'm like, is Garibaldi going to tell him?
He keeps doing it after Garibaldi comes to the room. He's like, oh yeah, let's just let me finish up here.
My notes, my black on black notes.
Black on black notes.
We cut back to the San Diego wastelands. A woman who logs off as 13 talks to the computer kaleidoscope again. The kaleidoscope confirms that they wanted Terminator Henry Winkler to go to Mars when he was done on Babylon 5. And the camera pans out and we see the psychop that Talia saw in the operating room when she scanned him.
Yeah, so is she Bureau 13?
I don't.
Maybe it's a prisoner reference? I'm just a little unclear why she signs off as 13.
13 is the most conspiratorial number.
I checked every episode of The Prisoner for a number 13, and I couldn't find one.
Did you really?
Maybe it's the Babylon 5 naming convention and Bureaus 1 through 12 exploded.
We cut to Talia's quarters, or button on the episode. Talia's looking at the PsyCop phone book. She finds the lady she was looking for, but that lady is listed as deceased, which immediately, I was totally confused by this. So she's there and the PsyCop phone book is like, match found. And I was like, wait, how did Talia describe the face of someone in a scan?
She put in most likely to cosplay as Agent Scully.
Oh, no one listened to poor Zathras, no.
So what are our thoughts on this? This is a weird episode.
You know, if they followed up on any of this shit in later episodes...
That would help.
Let me get this straight. A secret organization in Earth Force captures a terrorist on the verge of death, and then years later programs him to kill a business executive and then reintegrate himself into free Mars in order to wipe them out. My question is, why would you use your top secret, highly expensive infiltration terminator to kill Mr. Takagi? That didn't require any stealth whatsoever. It was just a dude walking down a hallway and killing him. Like, you could just kill Carter. You would just have somebody else do that, really, and just send this guy directly to Mars, because then he doesn't have to smuggle himself off of Babylon 5. He would already just be on Mars.
What did you call it, Joe? Larry DiTilio's electric razor?
No, it was Sarah.
DiTilio's electric shaver, yeah.
Okay, DiTilio's electric shaver. Yeah, I think that makes sense. Was I the only one that kept getting distracted by the soap opera? Like,
you just don't like Michael Patton.
You just won't let it go.
You haven't watched Battle Trek. Watch Battle Trek. It's going to change your life.
You just do not have a proper appreciation of Michael Beck's acting.
Mm-hmm. So I need to look up Michael Beck, clearly, right? Because, like, the other guest stars in this episode are fucking epic.
Have you not seen The Warriors?
No, I haven't.
You haven't seen it. You haven't seen The Warriors?
I have not.
My God!
Very important cultural artifact.
It felt like I was watching General Hospital or The Young and the Restless.
You've never watched those shows. Just admit it.
It felt like this episode belonged in season one.
I think your faith that everything was going to magically get better when we hit season two was maybe a little misplaced.
Well, I said that based, I have watched season two many times. I just keep forgetting that I skip over a bunch of episodes.
I mean, I will put up with a lot for Adrian Barbeau.
Yeah.
But the things that I could not deal with in this episode were just the complete defenselessness of Talia Winters is irritating.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
I don't believe that even a P5 is left without any ability to defend themselves and feel psych-ory.
Mm.
And then also, that Sheridan's personality is now off the rails. Like, we spent many episodes now... establishing him as this kind of idealist Boy Scout, orange obsessive. And now all of a sudden he's Michael Garibaldi and loves conspiracies.
But he needed someone to be like this paranoid freak. It would have made much more. I just don't get it. Just make it Garibaldi. Yeah. What the fuck?
I would never tell you anything that was not in your best interest.
Leave now. No. Disobedience.
Not yours.
You do not understand, but you will.
So getting to spoiler territory.
Well, there's really nothing, isn't there? But this isn't even really a spoiler. But I do note, and this along the lines of what we were just talking about, Sheridan is super into conspiracies.
Yeah.
The current president got off of the Earth Force One just before it exploded and then gave Sheridan personal orders that resulted in the disappearance of all all of the evidence and keeps doing kind of suspicious stuff, and yet it's not tickling his little conspiracy pleasure centers. He's not going, I mean, he went off into Bureau 13 cyborg assassin on a lot less information.
True, yeah. I mean, I have to say this Bureau 13 stuff is fucking silly, because this doesn't come up again.
Well, JMS says the Bureau 13 changed their name.
Yeah. Into what?
Oh, okay.
He doesn't say.
We are in spoilers. Oh, yeah. Thanks, JMS.
Yeah, we are in spoilers, but like, it doesn't, like, there isn't a secret group within EarthGov, unless you count Psycor. Like, Psycor is
they just changed their name to Psycor?
Yeah, like, it's...
Well, there is. No, there's... It's a secret... Jeffrey Combs, for example, is not involved. It's a secret group within Psycor. It's not within all Psycor.
Yeah, and Bester is involved, sure.
Bester definitely is involved.
Problem with Sheridan's sudden obsession with conspiracies is that he doesn't actually seem to care about the conspiracies. He just wants to know about them. Like, none of this says to him, should I be in this organization? Should I be doing a thing? Should I...
Should I fight with this group, yeah, or
should I take any kind of action? Apparently he's known that EarthGov is evil for like years and years and years, and
he's just collecting that info, like, you know, Harry Potter mage cards or something.
Ivanova continues to find Talia interesting.
Have you looked at her hair?
And her shiny,
oh my
hair.
God.
You cannot do it. You will go blind.
How long does it take for those two to date? It feels like it.
Fuck, yeah. I, like, Sarah, I find Talia interesting. And, like, when I was 16, dogs knew. Like, yeah, like, hello. So next time, we're doing soulmates. This is what the Babylon 5 wiki says for the first paragraph. Londo Mollari has a plan to rid himself of his three pesky wives, even as Talia Winter's ex-husband comes aboard, hoping for reconciliation.
What?
Yeah, I love this episode with a caveat. I love the A-plot in this episode. The A-plot in this episode is one of the best episodes in the entire series.
How many exes does Talia Winters have?
I don't know.
She's an adult woman, you know?
Why does only ex-boyfriends of all of the women come on the station?
There's a special ex-boyfriend visa program.
Hey, listener. Our theme music is composed by Absent Realities, with additional music this episode by Delta Centauri and by Megabit Melodies. You can find us on Twitter at Gray Sector Pod, or search up our Facebook page, Gray Sector, a Babylon 5 podcast. See ya.
This we need to leave in. I'm just saying.
Do it like Elvis.
Like a mush.
F*** the scene up at the end here. I don't know why. Hold me.
We'll clean it up in post.
Or are you senior director already?
No, I'm merely director of something.
No, that's a fancier title than I've ever had.
Apparently what I direct is email threads.
Yeah, that sounds right. Terrible British accent. I think he actually might be from England.
He's from London. That's rude.
It's so annoying. Oh, it's so annoying. Sorry. It's
we criticize your implementation of your native accents. I think there's some good clips from Cannibal Woman in the Avocado Jungle of Death, which was not a Carpenter movie, but was a project of hers.
Wow. Okay.
Is that a serious? That's a real movie.
That is a real movie. I think
you weren't joking.
Like, Republican fucking golfers. Surfers, I'm gonna nuke them.
Aren't that many surfers in San Diego?
There's a lot, actually, north of San Diego.
Okay.
That's called Los Angeles, Joe.
No.
Now we've alienated all of our Southern California listeners, of which I'm sure there are.
There's like three. Yeah, that's.
It's a real plot twist.
That's great. Yeah, it's more true than
you know. I'm drinking. You can't say things like that when I'm drinking.
Sorry.
There's a computer in front of me that's not waterproof or whiskey proof.
Just don't drink one of those, because they're awful.
Are there any good cocktails in the cookbook?
No. I can answer that definitively right now. No, there are not. I looked. They're all shit. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Drink.
Very true. Drink. Okay.
I don't know what drinking game we're playing, but... It just felt like time.
We're playing the infection game. No. So, okay. So,
in case the listener forgot, the only rule of the infection drinking game is drink when the pain becomes too great to bear.
End file. Due to budget cutbacks, portions of Gray Sector remain unfinished.
Punk rock today.